Hey, what's up, Mark? How you doing?
I'm great, man. How are you, Matt? What's happening?
I'm doing awesome. Just got a great show today. To our listeners at home or at work today, glad you're with us and welcome back to From the Ground Up with Mark Weller. I'm Matt Rienzo with Mark Weller. We have a really exciting show today. Our guest is seriously disrupting the luxury residential real estate market, and it's going to be really interesting to hear about his business. Mark, I know this is someone that you've known for a bunch of years. It's really cool what they're doing with Bespoke, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I've watched Cody and his brother build the entire business from the ground up, and I think that it's fascinating what they've done, and I've always had an affinity to the space they're in. I love the types of product that they represent and the types of communities and neighborhoods that they're in. So it's really fun. It's fun stuff to talk about.
So we teased it, Cody and Bespoke. Today, our guest is Cody Vyshinsky, co-founder of Bespoke Real Estate. Their website says, "We're rewriting the future of ultra-luxury real estate." And they are. They were recently featured in The Real Deal for their 1% commission structure. They specialize in $10 million or more home sales based in the Hamptons, Manhattan, Miami, and L.A. All right, let's invite Cody on.
Cody, thanks, how gents. Are you?
Hey, Cody, rocking, how you doing? And rolling. Yeah, I'm doing great today. Yeah, thanks for having me on, and lovely introduction. I'm blushing, actually. Thank you for that. Well, you summarized it perfectly.
I like the word disruptive. You know, that people use that word all the time, but it's really like you're breaking eggs, man. You're in there definitely making your own way, doing your own thing. You're definitely outside the box, but it's garnered a lot of people's attention and you're gaining a lot of business for it. Part of it is the commission structure where you realize that, you know, how to be better at it at the way you're doing it and still be really respectable in that space and offer the best marketing and branding and so on in the business. So tell us about what it's like to be a true egg breaker, sort of disruptor in that space, in that community.
Well, I think it comes with a lot of mixed emotions. You know, you got a lot of haters, and you got a lot of people who love it. You know, I think I look back at my career, and if someone were to say to me I'd be, you know, selling real estate, you know, if I was early on in life, I'd sort of laugh. You know, it was never what we wanted to do. And it sort of happened by happenstance. My brother got into real estate brokerage as sort of an ancillary discipline. He wanted to develop homes, you know, and so we went to the Hamptons and he was like, "This is the land of milk and honey." And we found that, you know, the majority of brokers, you know, there was a lot of them and they weren't doing a lot of business, and the minority was doing the most amount of business, but there was no delineation between, you know, the lower, you know, $2 million homes or the $20 million homes. And so we said, well, that's an opportunity to really carve out a niche. And so the impetus of Bespoke was more to really provide a highly customized, highly resourced service, you know. And so we created the word Bespoke was perfect. So we created this firm because we wanted to really give that higher end, you know, a really tailored fit and not a commoditized fit. And then when we kept going, we realized like quality is essential to us. You know, we didn't want to open up our doors to just a myriad of independent agents that were sort of all running amok doing their own thing. And, you know, we built a business that was much more like an investment bank, that it had designated resources and systems and divisions that were all working synergistically with each other to provide our clients with just a higher level of personalized service and, like I said, more resources. And then as we grew, you know, we really started to take a lot of market share there, and we've been the incumbent now since we've launched for about 10 years in the Hamptons, and now we spread into other markets. You know, we sold about $10 billion of $10 million and above real estate in the last 9 years we've been in business. So we've done quite well in that capacity. And the 1% commission structure, we noticed that, you know, our model afforded us the ability to be able to take, you know, some of that split that would otherwise go to the independent agent and pass that value back on to our clients, and or which we've sort of seen as a phenomenon, you know, really take what would be our commission and give it to the buy side broker and really delineate our clients' properties. So instead of it being like a 2-2 commission, it winds up being a 3-1. And some of our clients, they obviously care about selling their real estate, you know, 20, 30, $40 million homes. You know, they really want to incentivize the outside market. So they're even giving more commission. So more often than not, you know, our commission structures are, you know, 4% incentive fee to the outside broker, 3%, and then 1% to Bespoke. And so we do our best job in using data and using, let's say, the competencies of our team to really be able to pinpoint with a high degree of accuracy who the likely buyers are and who the brokers are that are working with the buyers and financial advisors and interior designers. So we follow this circuit and really have focused in on the actual data points that give a pathway towards how we're going to create some value. So long-winded answer of saying we're having fun with it. I think a lot of people still don't understand it because it's very counterintuitive to a traditional model. We see the traditional model as a dinosaur that is sort of slowly fading. The luster of it's waning from a lot of people. And we feel like David up against Goliath, and you know, we got our slingshot and our stone ready to take people out.
Yeah, no, that's a great intro. And I mean, I think about, I've known you since you were in high school, and I've seen you grow this business. And I know it's been hand to hand combat for many years to get it to the point and kind of wrestle it to where it is now. And so, like, you know, you did everything up front, and I know you've graduated from that, but you're still very involved in a lot of the day to day details. So, like, what do you spend most of your time doing these days?
I'm trying to do what I love most, which I love to pitch. I love high level client interfacing. I love complex deal structure. You know, so we've got a pretty robust team. You know, we have 70 some odd people under the Bespoke umbrella, you know, in corporate capacities. So my day to day is really focused in on, you know, helping the business development team just get sharper. And the beauty of my business, especially on the higher end, is I get to interface with some of the world's most remarkable people, right? So I think we've built a great Rolodex, and we're working that Rolodex consistently. And, you know, I'm on the phone with titans of industry and authors and entrepreneurial people and, you know, dynastic wealth. And so I my favorite thing is all about creating relationships and being in the weeds at that front.
No doubt. That's awesome. And you, no doubt you're good at that. And I understand why you say it's so rewarding and it's so fun.
Yeah.
There's a lot. Yeah. I have a lot of follow-up questions after that. Was a great introduction. First and foremost, I mean, can we identify how you and Mark know each other before the work related?
Well, he's my nephew and him are best friends from growing up.
Yeah. So Mark's nephew is my brother from another mother, and he was the best man at my wedding. He just had his first child. So shout out to Brian and Wyatt. Yeah. So my intro to
and
Brian
and Jillian too. And Jillian, she kind of
yeah,
had
I mean,
baby.
She yeah. She's the warrior. She's the warrior. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Brian was golfing, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
No, Brian. So I first met Brian. Brian came in. I tell the story to everybody. So we're in sixth grade. He came in and he was wearing the tightest pants a man has ever wore. New to the school. And I was like, who is this fucking guy? And why are those pants so tight? And all the girls were like, wow, he's so handsome. His pants are so tight. And I remember, like, my girlfriend at the time in sixth grade was like, he's so hot. So I was like, I got to fight this guy. Like, you know, so I went.
Well, I thought you were
going to
say you got to go get tight pants too.
No. I had like Jenkos. Like, I was in that phase where, like, my pants, I was wearing like a size 42 and I was like 4'11". And so I went up to Brian and we got in a tussle and he fought with integrity. And those were the days where, like, you know, you fought it out. You didn't like each other, and then you became best friends, right? So, like, Brian and I, we have so many stories. Not to make it about Brian, but we've had a remarkable, great friendship. And you know, I met Mark years ago, and Brian was always like my uncle, dude. He's on a tear. You got to meet him. I'm going down there to like work on a roof in Maryland or something like that. And he's building these homes. And you know, I say same thing. Quid pro quo is, you know, I really watched you guys from the onset, because obviously I knew you guys 20 some odd years ago by way of introduction of Brian. And yeah. You've been building what I consider to be the most enviable trajectory, you know, sort of in the real estate space in a very long time. So I tip my hat to you, because the entrepreneurial journey that I follow, I feel like I'm in your wake, even though we have different disciplines. Like, I am just a massive fan of what you guys are doing and how you're doing it. And it looks like you're having fun and you're just kicking ass and taking names. So I'm honored to be a part of that in some capacity.
Thanks, man. Yeah, no, we're like family, no doubt. And that's why it's exciting to get a chance to work together and on some of the things that we're working on, which we'll talk about in a little bit. We're working on some really exciting stuff together. But Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's funny because, you know, you guys are definitely kindred spirits in a lot of ways, a lot of personality, just a really incredible drive. So it's fun to get you both together. And it's interesting to hear about how you got to know each other. And then Mark started talking to me about Bespoke a couple of years ago. And it was in the context of, hey, you know, my cousin has this friend, he's doing this awesome, he has this awesome company, we got to check it out. And so we got to know your team a little bit a couple of years ago. And then, you know, fast forward, and now we're working on some stuff together. And obviously you have an incredible team that we'll talk a little bit more about in a second. Just following up on the more of the personal side, where'd you grow up? What town?
So I spent the first 10 years of my life, in Massachusetts, sort of in the deep boondocks. And then we moved to Stony Brook, which is a nice little place in North Shore, Long Island.
Yep.
My dad moved my brother and myself there. My brother was 12. I was just turning 10. And so, you know, shortly thereafter, as I mentioned, I met Brian, but we grew up in Stony Brook, had a great, awesome childhood, you know, sort of like, we were the outsiders. We had a great group of friends, sort of like bike riding, playing sports. Like, you just had an awesome childhood. I went to NYU, and I was in the city for a bunch of years. I had a great, you know, career in my 20s. I was in data analytics, in the telecom space. So a totally different animal, totally different space. So I feel like I've got to see a little bit of a few different worlds, but Stony Brook is the short answer to the question.
Very cool. Very cool. Now back to the business discussion. So we were talking about the 1% and how you're pushing, you know, those fees off to the buy side. So, you know, I know your story and your company's rise, you know, I mentioned you were recently featured in The Real Deal, really exciting coverage there. I'd imagine if you read the comments section of some of those posts, some people are kind of pissed. But can you break it down for the layperson? I'd imagine all the buy side brokers are happy. All the list side brokers are pissed because they either have to give up their commissions or compete on what they perceive to be an imbalanced playing field because of your commission structure. Is that fairly accurate?
Yeah, great question, man. I think, you know, the way we looked at it is we wanted to create the best value proposition we could in the market, right? Because we wanted sort of an impenetrable, what we call competitive moat. Right. So on the buy side, like if you bring a buyer to any Bespoke properties, like nothing changes. If not, you're more incentivized. Right. So like we want everybody to make more money. And on the list side, you know, we come with a tremendous sort of resource stack. You know, so we always looked at one independent agent or an independent agent team that has a small team of quote unquote other independent agents. You know, we really wanted to be able to have people who have a very keen, focused discipline, who are compensated and incentivized whether or not the property sells, right? So the way we've always looked at the business is like, we want to be able to compete. We want to be able to give our clients like no bullshit, real resources, and be able to give them quantifiable and tangible value, right? So that they can say, all right, I have all these people whose bandwidths are not constrained, right? So I think the fundamental issue from a sort of a big real estate person or brokerage team is that they're like chickens with no heads, right? They're spinning a lot of plates, and it's hard to be really good at all things, right? So I've learned that about myself, and I think anybody would say the same thing. Like, you know, you're sort of good at a few things maybe at best, but you need a good team. You need good partners on your team that can take the ball when it's their turn to take the ball. Like, it's a simple analogy that I think has worked throughout the course of time, sports and business or whatever it is. But real estate brokerage, for some reason, you know, you hire the person, which was always sort of strange to me. You know, here you are selling an asset that has the value of a small business, you know, in some cases, and you're sort of passing it on to this person you barely know. You're not really asking them, you know, the depth of their resources and what their obligations are, you know, in terms of how they're going to sell the property, how much money they're going to spend, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, when I sit down with clients or I'm debating, you know, Bespoke relative to the traditional model, I always say, like, let's put this in layman's terms at your point. Like, you're offering a 4% commission, right? And let's say it's a $20 million house, just for simple math. Like, all right, so that's $800,000 is the potential grab. It's huge money by every stretch of the imagination. So I would say to, like, have you ever asked your broker, like, how are you going to justify to me the value of that $800,000 by what you're actually going to do to increase the probability of that sale? Not just like put it on Zillow or Street Easy or a local MLS, take some photos and send an email out and wait for the phone to ring. But I think the industry has gotten so complacent.
And it's like, and all those commercials about the financial advisor, you know, like, do you ask your financial advisor these questions? It's like, no, nobody ever does any of
Nobody does. Yeah. Like, that's, I think, Matt, you nailed it, right? Is like the biggest quest that I've been on is to get the sellers and the buyers of these types of assets, or any type of real estate for that matter, to ask the right questions and think about it a little bit more circumspect, you know, and really get into like, okay, how do I really value who I'm going to put in charge of this asset? It seems that the industry has been, you know, all right, my friend used this broker and they're sort of in the mix and they sold a home or two on the street. I'm like, here you go.
Right? Yeah. Like, yeah,
they
no
don't
doubt.
Really care how the sausage is made, right? As long as it turns out the other side. So, you know, to be specific.
It's all relative too. It's all relative how important these assets are to these individual people. I mean, totally. A $400,000 house is just as important to somebody who makes X amount of dollars or has X amount of net worth as a $40 million house to a billionaire.
And it could be more.
Could actually be more, disproportionately more. And you're totally right. There's just a lack of sort of transparency and understanding what value are you going to provide other than I've seen you on the street before and you seem to be pretty good at
It's a strange, I mean, look, I think the business is evolving in front of our eyes. And to your question, Matt, is that, you know, my sense is, you know, the brokers don't really understand Bespoke's business model because it's very different from their sort of traditional stack. And so when they sold the 1%, you know, people didn't read that it's a list side commission, right? So they just thought it was sort of the total gross commission being offered. And everyone's like, well, you know, I'm never going to bring a buyer to your property. And I'm like, no, like, don't worry about me, right? Just focus on bringing a buyer to our properties, right? Like, focus on being paid. And then you said on the list side, you know, when we go to pitch, you know, we have always thought that we brought an elevated game to marketing. You know, that we really create some of the most beautiful content, if not the most beautiful content in the brokerage space. And when we launched Bespoke, we really wanted to lead with superior marketing, superior lifestyle video content, utilization. And I use data, not as like a kitschy buzz term, but because we have no independent agents, we could build, we have been building for the last 10 years and continue to evolve it. I'd say the best database for this type of ultra high net worth individual. So I'll give you an example. When I sit at a pitch, right, and we can go anywhere USA, but I'll just use my own little nook of, let's say, Upper East Side, you know, and I say, okay, let's look at everybody that's bought a townhouse on the Upper East Side in the last decade. Let's look at that data, right? Like, you need somebody to be able to comb through the data, first get their hands on it, break the LLCs, and then granularize it in a way that says, okay, here's everybody that's bought a home on the Upper East Side, a townhouse. What are their vocations? Where else do they live? Can we get information on their boards that they sit on, the companies that they're involved with? Did they move from downtown to uptown? Are they coming from Europe? Whatever those sort of threads are, because the data tells the story. Right. And we're not saying that we don't do the, you know, very generic marketing and print advertisement and digital display and all those kind of things. But what gives us a very unique competitive advantage is once we have those insights, and there's many of them, we can then design a hyper-targeted marketing strategy that is iterative over the course of our listing period that goes directly to the highest probable candidate for these types of assets, right? And you'd be shocked is when you look at these markets all throughout the country, there's so many fact patterns that emerge that give us the ability to be able to, again, say, okay, well, for strange reasons, like, there's these private equity guys that have all made a lot of money over the last year that are buying these types of vacation homes. So, like, let's target to these people and let's use their network, because it's obviously clear by way of information, to be able to get in front of these right people. So I think a lot of brokers can't do that because they don't have the resources. And brokerages, not to pick on them, but like a Douglas Elliman, a Corcoran, a Sotheby's, even if they had that information, they couldn't give it to all of their independent agents. Because you can imagine right now, all thousands of agents have the same information. Like, it would collapse in 2 seconds. It would be worthless. So I think we have a really unique competitive advantage on the list side. And we built a listing business where, you know, we have several billion dollars currently under management. We sort of maintain that throughout the course of our market. And we want to be able to again, give a rock solid value proposition that is you couldn't duplicate it in a short period of time if you wanted to. And that's the game plan.
So is the special sauce that you guys provide? It's your, not only your access to buyers, but your ability to target buyers and then wrap around them with marketing. If you had to identify like that, your one thing or your couple things that really give you an edge, it sounds like that would be it.
That's definitely one of the leading, if not the, right? I think that it allows us to be able to not only look at the buyers, but then also who these buyers are networking with, right? So interior designers, financial advisors, yacht brokers, whatever it is, like there's this small little ecosystem of players that emerge, right? And so for us, you know, like really getting in and oozing into that network by way of utilization of data and marketing, it gives us, again, a very unique competitive advantage. And we use that as not only, you know, brand awareness and business development for Bespoke, because we have beautiful properties and I think we have a great brand, but we use it to sell our real estate. So more often than not, you know, we're getting a lot of inbounds from our marketing because we're really taking the time and spending the time, money, and energy to make sure it's going in front of the right people.
No, that's great. And I know Mark wants to ask a question, but really quickly, just to finish that last thought, you know, you mentioned your marketing prowess, and that's kind of initially how we were introduced to you, was your, you know, not fully knowing everything that you were capable of, you know, naively, of course. So we had a conversation about, you know, sales and marketing and those kinds of things. But then I know at some point, you know, your company pivoted from just sales and marketing, you know, as a primary function to the brokerage. When did that kind of occur and how did that play out?
Yeah, so we were starting to receive a lot of conversations, inbound requests to do creative, because our creative for the real estate was so good. So can you do this for us? We have this building that we're doing stuff for. Ironically, you know, Turnberry, who owns Fountain Blue, is one of our first clients on the marketing branding side. They reached out to us and they wanted us to sort of be their New York partner, because they had some product. Turnberry, you know, was some big developments down in Miami. Yeah,
great product.
Yeah. And so for us, you know, we saw that, okay, that was a massive opportunity for us to really be able to, you know, put more energy and resources behind our creative and our distribution, right? So we built a, you know, fully integrated, which I find a lot of these marketing firms, they still outsource a lot, but fully integrated marketing and branding firm that does the creative, it does the renderings and blah, 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 blah. But it takes advantage of that exact same special sauce, if you will, right? And so the complementary relationship between the brokerage and the marketing company is unique, because the marketing company, from my understanding, is one of the only ones that could do creative, but it could also do distribution directly to the people that are going to move the needle. Unlike right. other creative and branding agencies, they'll come in and they'll be like, all right, we're going to help you with design. We're going to help you build the collateral, but then like it's on your sales team to go do something with it. Right. So like we've built an engine that still has a, you know, the sort of outward facing capability, even if there's no brokerage attached to it at all. So it gives us the opportunity to be able to go into a myriad of verticals, you know, not just real estate. You know, we do branding and creative and distribution for yacht and aviation companies. And we were Lamborghini's branding agency of record. We did a bunch of special events with us, and we do jewelry, anything really it is. Like we could help that company sort of do a customized data set, create branding strategically for them, and put it in front of the right people again, which I think is a unique value proposition.
That is definitely, and in full disclosure, we recently engaged Bespoke on our Six Senses project in Grand Bahama, you know, and you talked about a lot of the elevated sort of the elevated game, and that you have a superior sort of approach I think. And I would say, you know, to this luxury real estate market and so on. So what about the Six Senses Grand Bahama development or the Six Senses brand excites you? Like, what do you think about that? And why are you excited to be involved with this project?
Oh, I mean, we think it's probably one of, if not the biggest opportunity we've had from a branding on the hospitality side. We think Six Senses, you know, is just really nipping at the heels, if not surpassing some of the household brands like an Aman or a Rosewood. And I think they're just delivering the best product in the marketplace. So like, we feel that this gives us an entree to be able to not only illustrate our skills, and we're working with a dynamic team, obviously with Weller and obviously with Six Senses. So we want to do this exact project, and we've been itching to do this exact project to knock it out of the park and bring Six Senses Grand Bahama to our customer base. And also the world, you know, in an extremely elevated marketing strategy, at least my take. So I think Six Senses, it gives the, let's say, hospitality and hotel destination playing field landscape a real breath of fresh air, right? I think they're the people who are traveling this circuit, and they've been to a lot of places, right? So the folks who are going to be purchasing here and be staying here, I think they're in for a real treat. And I think the anticipation is high, right? Because they are more Bahama focused than ever before for obvious reasons. So I think from the pipeline of what is in the mix by way of Caribbean luxury destination, this couldn't come soon enough is my sense. So like, we're geared up and pretty excited to be able to be a part of the team. And we really think it's going to be a great project. And I think, the one thing I love about it too, is it's small batch, it's high quality. It's not this massive density project. It's not for the everyman USA. It's really gives an opportunity for us to really do something, no pun intended, bespoke, right? And really get in front of the best people on the planet.
No, we agree and we love it. I mean, being 58 miles off of West Palm Beach, proximity to Florida, and how just naturally beautiful it is. But, you know, it's a lot of fun, no doubt, which leads me over to like working with your brother, like switching up a little bit here, changing gears, like working with your brother, Zach. You know, how do you guys divide and conquer? That's one of the questions. And how much fun is it to work with him and the entire team? But start with how it is with your brother and how do you guys work
together? Yeah, that's really unique.
Yeah. Yeah. Great question. Look, I think that we're very lucky. First and foremost, I know a lot of people who have brothers that couldn't work with them in that capacity for whatever reason. So I think kudos to my parents and honestly, kudos to my brother, are throughout my entire life, because he's fostered, such a strong brotherly bond from us since day one, and we've never had a competitive bone in our body with each other, right? Like we really viewed one another as complementary, and we create one, right? Like what's mine is his, literally we split every dollar, like I'm down here with my kids and his kids. Like we're extremely family oriented. When he's a little down, I pull him up and vice versa. So like, I think we're really blessed on just a personal relationship, and the no competition thing, I think, is very huge in terms of being in business with your brother, because like we're all on the same team in a real way. There's no feeling of like, oh, he's getting more or whatever it is at the root of it. So my brother is an extremely cerebral guy. He's a systems guy, right? Like I think he thinks by way of systems, and I'm a total gunslinger. Like, I'm like, all right, like, he's like, oh, we got to get in front of this guy. I'm like, let's fucking call him right now. Like, what are we waiting for? Like, I can tap dance on that all day. And he's like, no, methodical. And we got to create this approach, whatever it is. So I think we also balance each other out, because he's more the brain. I'm more the mouth. And that combination works really well. So
no doubt. That's
Zach
awesome.
Zach's down in Miami Beach. He's living here. He's building the team here. We got a great office. We're collecting a lot of inventory, but he sort of oversees, the entire ecosystem of Bespoke. And again, his job is he wants to empower strong leadership. In my brother's way of thinking, the more he can give off of his plate to, sort of key management members of the team, and so fostering that relationship, the better of an organization we're going to be. So Zach is really behind the scenes kind of guy. Yeah. And I'm more of the, I'm in the weeds and trying to, you know, foster the on the ground relationship. So it's been a blessing. I consider myself to be lucky. Yeah.
Yeah. Congrats on that, Matt.
Yeah. You know, just following up on that. I mean, as you kind of split your time and split your expertise, you have offices in Miami, Manhattan, in the Hamptons, and in LA, I believe. Like, does he kind of run the Florida office and you kind of run the New York office, or is it not really locational like that? Are you guys just working on everything together all the time?
Yeah, he's more CEO, I would say. You know, so he, even though he's down here, the systems and the management process, which is always a work in progress, right? Like anybody who owns a business and knows a business, like this stuff is never fully baked, right? So he spends a lot of time just sort of working it and getting it better and better, you know? And so from my side, you know, I'm in the office so I can be helpful. But we have a managing director in New York, overseas New York, and my brother's down here. And so we've set up our business again where, you know, a lot of that leadership and the day-to-day responsibility doesn't necessarily fall on our hands, even though it's mm-hmm. sort of within our purview. Right. And it's still a growing company. So, like, we don't lie to ourselves and think we're Apple. Like, our sleeves are rolled up and our hands are dirty on even the dumbest shit every single day, because that's just how it is.
Yeah, you got to get your hands dirty. There's no question. Exactly. How did it come about with your locations of where you ended up, you know, creating offices? And how do those offices work together? Like, to just if we wanted to use Grand Bahama as an example. So how does your Miami office support, you know, all the work you're doing in New York? And how does that all tie together?
It's a great question again. So we went to the Hamptons first because we saw it as like the most concentrated group of ultra.
And you were from Long Island, so I'm sure that was natural.
It was total natural. So I was in the city and we had the opportunity to work out of Manhattan, but Manhattan's a huge space, right? Even though it's small, it's just super voluminous. So like the Hamptons gave us an opportunity to sort of build this database, build this relationship foundation, and then reverse engineer it, go to Manhattan, go to Florida, go to Aspen, go to California, and utilize the relationships that we've cultivated, right? So it's only been a recent endeavor the last few years that we've opened ourselves up to these other markets, and we've done it in an extremely methodical way. So that way our South Florida database and relationships, you know, they've been built on the backs of what we've done in New York. And so because we're not an independent agent shop, you know, again, it's all cultivated through corporate infrastructure, we could really leverage these relationships. So a guy's buying on the ocean or selling on the ocean, he usually has something in Manhattan and he wants to go buy down something in Miami Beach. And all of them have boats and all of them have been playing golf and vacationing right. in the Bahamas. And many of them have, you know, call it their fourth or fifth homes in the Caribbean. You know, and I think ever since COVID, you know, the Bahamas has just really taken off for a myriad of reasons. You know, so we've seen a lot of our clients shift their, you know, formal residence even to the Bahamas, and then sort of like are moving back to, you know, doing day-to-day business in the States. But, you know, we think that it's really just analyzing that corridor in which our clientele have been traveling and buying homes. And where their lifestyle goes. And the beauty of that is it's not too spread out. You know, it's even though it's could be challenging to break into, it's an extremely concentrated group of individuals, right? Okay. There's so for us, the whole goal is to be where our clients are and be of value throughout their entire life cycle. Whether it's, you know, selling, renting, marketing, relationships that we're passing off, or whatever it is, you know, like, so we want to be at the forefront and think we want them to be thinking of bespoke wherever they're buying, selling, renting real estate.
Yeah. I mean, that $10 million specialization, I mean, you guys really put a flag in the ground there. And, you know, it seems a little out there to some people, but when you, like you said, it's very concentrated, you're focused on the market. So what has that specialization done for you? Obviously it's been really helpful because you're one of the go-to people in the industry now, and now you're building out a network. So what has it done for you and your business? And I would imagine it's been a lot of fun too.
When, from a life cycle standpoint, did you guys announce that as your thing?
Yeah.
And what did it do for you?
Yeah.
So I'll work backwards. We launched in August of 2014. That was when we said we're going to, you know, only do 10 million above. And at the time, it was a lot of money too. In 2014, like 2013, 2014, the value difference is pretty crazy. Actually, if I look back, you know, and how many deals we've missed and should have bought ourselves. But the reality was, we saw it as, you know, again, maybe a long journey, but if we were going to do this and we wanted to be brokers and we want to work on amazing stuff with amazing people. Like, I want to look back at my career and say, like, not that the price point was, or the money was the motivating factor, but it was just like the enticement of working on amazing real estate with amazing people. That was the impetus of the whole thing. And I remember every broker, and, you know, at the time, there's a lot of rags, you know, media outlets that are like, these guys are going to be on their face in 2 minutes. Because, like, they're, you know, there's, who can support a 10 million and above model, you know, and in the Hamptons we launched, and within 14 months, we were number one in sales and number one in listings under management. And we've maintained that position every year since, you know, so
that's amazing. That's incredible, man.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I'm really glad I asked that question, because that's fascinating as hell. And that's amazing. I mean, you have a date where you started doing it that way, and then a short period of months after, it showed its results. Yeah. And that's a marketing, that's a genius, you know, marketing, not a ploy, but it was
a strategy
that is, you know, unique. And if I'm God willing, I'll have a $20 million home to sell sometime, but if I need to sell it with someone, I'd want it to be someone who specializes in that. It makes total sense. Yeah.
I appreciate it. And look, we work really hard, you know, so it there's not this just like, hey, you know, we have this great mousetrap and it looks good on paper. You know, like we're hardworking folks, and we are a glass half empty type of organization. Right. So, like, we're trying to constantly improve. And again, because I think there was a desire, especially in that market, because it was sort of so complacent and everything was so commoditized, and we brought a pretty fresh, not only brand, but approach. And we were aggressive, right? Like, we went after what we wanted to 7 days a week. And
like
we,
the honey badger, like you're like we, the honey badger. It takes what it wants.
We're not afraid of a fight, you know, like we got thick skin. Like, yeah, I guess that's right. You know, so like our whole strategy was to really like deliver results, you know? So and I hate to say it now, is like, you know, I've sort of gotten a little more macro with my thinking, and selling a, you know, one $10 million, $20-30 million house, like, it honestly doesn't move the needle anymore. Like, I and I'm not saying that's a ridiculous statement to say, but like, the mission of bringing Bespoke's gospel, you know, to new markets and sort of the more universal acceptance of our model and what we're trying to accomplish is significantly more exciting to us. You know, so I think we're very lucky. We've built a great business in the Hamptons. You know, we control about 70% of the market there, above 10 million. So, like, we've dominated. Awesome. Yeah. Like, we have 7 out of 10 transactions there. So we're in that field pretty significantly. In New York City, for example, like, in the summertime, there was a little over $1 billion of 10 million plus listed. We listed a third of it. Right. So, like, I think a lot of people are starting to see, like, all right, these aren't schmoes from, you know, wherever, you know, with some kitschy mousetrap. They have results, right? And they have relationships, and, you know, we have a lot of resources. So it gives us the ability to be able to go to all these clients. And so, like you said, on the real deal, you know, there's a lot of people like, ah, you're not going to get any business. Like, hate on. Like, we just want to connect. We want to get in front of the people. We want to speak our gospel. When we get a listing, like, we are on it. Like, it's not like I'm just pitching and forgetting about these people. Like, the whole thing is about grabbing the process by the collar and seeing it all the way through to close and then some. And everybody on the team is focused on amazing customer service. And what I find is the basic tenet of this industry, which nobody seems to remember, it's fucking communication. Like, we just want to communicate, right? Yeah. Like, we just want to tell them what's going on and what we're doing to earn the business and continuing to push, you know? So,
but what you've done too, though, and I'll wrap it up on this though, what you've done really good, and that's what attracted us to do business with you so closely, is you've built the infrastructure that allows for a data-driven approach combined with a very precise marketing approach, which we value, a world-class premium marketing approach, which we value. And you put those two things together, with some hustle. And next thing you know, you have something unique that just a really large company with the wrong approach cannot have. It's just not possible to retrofit that backwards. So I congratulate you on that success. Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. It's amazing. I'm so proud. You. So proud of you and to watch you go through this business growth. And as a fellow entrepreneur, I just love it.
Yeah, you're the man. I appreciate that more than you know. And again, like, whether or not we were to do business, and I'm super grateful we are, and I've been waiting for the moment to do that. Like, I am equally, if not more, I can't express that enough of how you have developed yourself and your business around you. I think it's just amazing. So I'm excited to be on an entrepreneur journey. And I look at your life and I look at how you operate. And Matt, I don't know you as well as I know Mark, but like, I look at you from afar and I see you got 5 kids and you're enjoying life and you're squeezing the most out of it and time is precious and you're doing it right. And that's exactly what we aim to do.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly, man. That's awesome.
Yeah this is great. Thanks so much, Cody. This is going to bring it to an end today. Really awesome conversation with Cody Vyshinsky. Cody, thanks so much for being with us.
Gents, really appreciate the opportunity and look forward to kicking ass and selling some killer real estate in the Bahamas.
Yeah. We're going to build something special down there. No doubt. We can't wait.
Love it.
All right, guys. Thank you. A big thank you to Cody Vyshinsky of Bespoke Real Estate for joining us today. We look forward to hosting other industry experts on future shows. If you have a suggestion or guest or show topic, please hit us up at Weller Development on Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. I'm Matt Rienzo. He's Mark Weller. Keep building, people.